Coming up this week in computer hardware, what's wrong with Intel's new 800P? Fix it at Oculus Rift, Seasonic has 600 silent watts, and AMD's Project ResX. All that and more coming up next on Twitch.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twitch.
Bandwidth for Twitch is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Twitch, This Week in Computer Hardware, episode 456, recorded March 8th, 2018. 600 silent watts and some expensive Optane. Welcome to Twitch This Week in Computer Hardware, a Twitch weekly show that aims to bring you the most useful, most engaging, most affordable, most expensive, most delightful, most amusing, most mobile, most desktop-bound gaming productivity mayhem available in this universe or any known or unknown universe. Mr. Ryan Schrout has been tied down by Lilliputians who are apparently beating him senseless and extracting promises for future clock cycles off of his next PC build. So Mr. Alan Malventano is joining us from PC Purr. Alan, is anything exciting in the world of SSDs, or have you just given up on storage and are moving on to full-time keyboard analysis?
A keyboard analysis? Good Lord.
Yeah.
I don't know.
This week in Cherry MX Reds.
I don't know if I want to go that far off the deep end.
Cherry MX Brown, the forgotten key.
Yeah. Examine the delights of the Cherry MX Brown. So, interesting day.
Okay.
I've spent the past couple of weeks messing around with a new SSD from Intel, the 800P.
Mm-hmm.
Capital P, not lowercase p. This is getting a little bit confusing because there's actually a 760P that's like a regular NAND SSD. There was a 600P that was a regular NAND SSD. Those two had lowercase p's at the end. Then there was a 900P, which was that, you know, fire-breathing, like, enterprise style, but made for a consumer, Optane SSD.
Right.
Now we have an 800P. Sort of its little brother. It actually, those familiar with Optane memory might seem a little bit familiar if you look at the picture on the stream there. It's an M.2 SSD. It has a couple of packages worth of Crosspoint installed.
Mm-hmm.
Very much like the Optane memory, which was the caching SSDs that they made a while back, which came in 16 and 32 gig. These new parts, however, are increased capacity. So 58 gig, yes, I know it's oddball. We'll get there in a minute. And also 118 gig. So basically you take 60 and 120 gig, but you subtract a couple off of those capacities. They needed a little bit of extra space. Yeah, they needed a little bit of extra space to deal with management of the media. So, like, usually an SSD will have some RAM alongside the controller or just some place to put stuff. Well, there's no RAM here on these. However, there's Crosspoint. It sort of acts like RAM. So they're just, you know, they needed a little bit of extra space just to give them a little bit of an extra, you know, safety margin, buffer, whatever you want to call it. Like, it's just little bit of extra room there that they needed to use for, you know, error correction and whatnot. The capacity is still kind of small.
Right.
You know, 118 gig. Yeah. I mean, you know, think back. It was like 2008 or 2009 when, you know, there was like an OCZ, like Indie Lynx controller, 120 gig SSD, right? So you're trying to go back to a capacity point and expecting people to use it when nowadays we have like a typical OS install is like 20 gig and some games are pushing like 50 gig.
Well, so, you're also, you know, Samsung 850 Evo, 250 gigabytes is $85. A half a terabyte is, I want to say like $160. You know, the terabytes are still floating up there, you know, around $340 if you want to stick with Samsung. But for that's just... it's so small, it must be cheap, right? So they can put it in entry-level PCs to improve performance.
You would think so, and don't get me wrong. The performance for the size of the device and, you know, and all those aspects of it, and the fact that it's M.2, and the fact that it's a relatively low power draw, you know, it only draws like 3 watts or so when it's active. is all very good things, and it turns in extremely low latencies, and it's, as far as nimble SSDs go, it's super quick. It's very responsive. Okay. Those are the things that CrossPoint promises, right? Cost per gig wise, actually, I would say jump to the last page of the review if you wanted to do a look at the pricing. Might as well just jump straight to it. Cost per gig wise, this comes in higher cost per gig than the 900P did. And the 900P was a beautiful, like, you know, way more channel controller than this part, and PCIe 4 lanes and half-height, half-length, and came with a, you know, really solid heatsink on it. Like, all these things that you would figure would drive the price up. Those launched at like $1.25 per gig, $1.39 per gig, depending on which size you were going for. These new parts, which are slower because they're only half the bandwidth, they're only two lanes of PCI Express, you know, lower capacity, it has all these sort of negatives working against them. The only bonus to them is really that it's a smaller thing that you can get into more places. You can't really put a 900P in a laptop, right? But $2.22 a gig, like, it's, you know, it's just way higher than $1.39.
That's so 2012.
It's actually going again back to those days. And don't get me wrong, it's a new type of media, and I get it, and the performance is better when in places where it actually matters more for your typical kind of client workload stuff, which is low Q-depth random reads. That's all great, but at that price, it's just really high. Really expensive.
Let's roll this back for a second. I'm looking at the performance numbers, right? And they're nice, but in any normal human work activity, am I actually going to be able to feel the difference between, you know, 75,000 IOPS and 51,000 IOPS, or 75,000 IOPS and, you know, 49,000 IOPS?
Well, those are for random writes. You'd have to be to be beaten on it pretty hard to get that part. The part you want to really look at for the client QDEF weighted charts, as far as like the feel of the SSD, would be more along the lines of the blue bars on that top chart on the QD weighted page. And I mean, they're definitely at the top, right? Both of the 800P capacities are up there. And, you know, I even threw in the Optane memory parts, even though you normally wouldn't use them as a system drive, but there are some people crazy enough to do it, and they're probably going to want to know how these other two compare. But the 900P at the bottom there is basically, it's the same number. You know, it's the same. So that would translate to roughly the same feel, if you were to try to have a scale of like how snappy the system felt to you, you know, on par with the 900P when it comes to a random workload. But if your workload is more sequential, which is the next chart down, basically you're almost cutting that performance in half compared to the faster parts, because of because of the interface being cut in half, right? So the more sequential of a workload it sees, the, you know, now you start seeing more of a disadvantage with this part compared to the faster parts that are out there. And then that third chart, we don't normally show, but I thought it might be interesting here. NAND SSDs do really well on writes, random writes, which is the left edge of that chart. But then as you get more and more reads in there, it takes them longer to service because they actually have to look the data up and retrieve it from flash memory, which takes a long time. Technically, NAND also writes slowly, but it can kind of cheat because it's acknowledging the data from the host, and it's basically buffered by the time it tells the system, okay, I'm done. So that's why NAND SSDs tend to have, like, you know, pretty high write performance, even despite the flash being slower. But then if you look at the other lines on that chart, they're all kind of swooping the other direction, right? They'll start kind of low on the random writes if it's a smaller capacity SSD. In other words, the yellow line on that chart there is only a 16 gig operating part. It's only one die worth of CrossPoint. So it can only do so much as far as its write speed. But once you get to the right side of that chart, again, all of those SSDs that have Optane memory installed or CrossPoint memory installed all climb up really high. And they're all, you know, pushing upwards of 100,000 random read IOs per second compared to something like 20,000 for a you know, for a NAND SSD. So if you're just doing a purely random read on your system, you know, you just booted the system, it's trying to read from a bunch of different places at the same time, trying to launch a bunch of applications at the same time, you're potentially seeing an upwards of 5x improvement in that kind of a workload. Now, again, this totally changes once you start throwing sequentials in and you start, you know, mixing up the workload, and it's far away from, or anything away from a pure 4K random read. But it certainly does help, right, to have something that nimble is great. But circling back to what you were saying earlier, how good can it really be to make it worth the cost when the cost is that much, right? When you have NAND SSDs that are decent performers that are going to get you within, you know, within a few percent or a few seconds for a given operation, but you get way more capacity. And
yeah, for me, the sequential writes are much more exciting in a lot of ways, because I, you know, I work with giant video files. To be able to write, you know, at a 2x or 3x, you know, factor for a sequential write is a big deal to me. But the capacity is so small. You know what I mean? I look at a, you know, Crucial's got their M.2 drives, their MX300s, and there's a half terabyte M.2 drive for $140.
Yeah.
You know, it's 3D NAND too.
Yeah, no, I mean, so you, I mean, that's what this is up against, right? You have a 118 gig part is $200.
Right.
For this, you know, for $200 gets you an awful lot of NAND. It may not be as snappy, but if you, you know, again, what, think about what would restrict you to needing cross-point or Optane performance levels in a thing that's an M.2 part. It would probably be a laptop.
Right.
More you know, most likely that's probably your case, right? You're a,
I mean,
you're
a workstation power
user. Right. Yeah, you're a power user. You have a laptop that you use as a workstation. You're rendering stuff. You're editing stuff. You're moving a lot of media around. That's all good and fine. But unless that laptop has two M.2 slots or one M.2 slot for your OS and some other, you know, be it a SATA, just some other storage device has to be in there for you to have your bulk storage, because 118 gig is not a bulk storage thing. Right. It's great for an OS and a game or two. But you can't do much more than that. Right.
Great for an OS and Photoshop and Premiere, but don't save too many videos.
Mm-hmm. And there's one other possibility that not only did Intel push when they were talking to when they were doing their press briefings on this, but also that we've seen crazy people, including myself, toy around with even the 32 gig Optane memory parts. And that is, if you go one page back from the end of the article, we did a bunch of RAID testing. So we got four of these 118 gig parts. Again, remember, cost per gig is high. So again, you might actually be better off with just the 900P. But you can beat 900P performance if you put four of these in an array. And you can fit that on one card if you have a X299 platform that can do what's called a PCIe bifurcation. Basically, you can split a x16 slot into four, you know, physically four groups of PCIe lanes that can each speak to one individual PCIe device. So you're only using one slot, but you're talking to four things, which is handy, right? When you're trying to connect a bunch of SSDs to the system. Mm-hmm. And when we do that, everything scales as you would expect. You know, the sequential performance of one of these drives is like 1.5 gig per second. It goes all the way up to just under 6 gig per second if you put four of them in an array, as far as your sequential transfers, right? But I kept on the same chart, so that was the blue line, but on the same chart I have the red line, which is if you were to make the same array out of 960 Pros, which would not only be a much larger array, right? It would be, you know, upwards of a couple of terabytes worth of storage space. It would go way faster. It would do 13 gig per second sequential. So if you were really trying to push the envelope on, oh, I want super speed, you're potentially making something that's larger, faster, in a straight line at least, you know, than the Optane parts. But then if you go to the very next chart, everything flips upside down, because now we're talking about random reads. How well these devices handle random reads? And there's a cluster of four lines along the bottom edge there. Those are all your NAND parts. And then as soon as you throw Optane in there, you're on a completely different level as far as performance. It just jumps up and it literally just walks all over the NAND parts. The blue line on that chart there is a single 118 gig 800p, and even an array of four, you know, of the Samsung 960 Pros can't even clip past it, even at QDEP 32, which is even outrageous to be at for any kind of a client workload. It still can't even beat it. So, you know, just different things to look at there. There's more details on that page of the review, but if you really want gory technical details, like what the latencies do when you go into an array, and
right,
you know, you actually do take a latency hit by putting any SSDs in any sort of RAID, because the, you know, there's extra processing that needs to happen. Usually it's not that significant, but once you start dealing with SSDs that only have 10 microsecond latencies, you know, it starts to add up. Like, it, you know, if you do a VROC array, it adds an extra 5 microseconds for each request. When drive is already doing 10, adding another 5, you just lost, you took a 50% hit on your latency just because you put them in an array.
Right.
So that's another thing to consider, right? It all is not peachy by putting these things in an array. You get great sequential scaling, but the random performance takes a hit. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, should you, you know, be compelled to buy this because of the performance despite the low capacity, will it work on any motherboard?
Any motherboard that can handle a PCI Express by 2, you know, PCI 3.0 by 2 SSD. Basically, it just needs to be able to support NVMe, and it needs to be able to support PCI Express in its M.2 slot, not SATA. There are some older laptops that might have had an M.2 slot that was SATA only.
Okay.
That is possible. You just have to be look into that, make sure it can handle PCI Express. If it can, chances are it can handle BI4 devices, and it just backwards compatible with BI2 devices. No big deal.
Okay. Any thoughts on why it's so expensive?
I'm kind of baffled as to why it's this much more expensive per gig than a 900P. I was really expecting this to launch at least matching the smaller capacity 900P, which comes in at almost $1.40 per gig. Instead, it started at $1.69 per gig for the 118 gig. And it's a much less complicated device. It has much less cross-point installed on it, like less chips, less chip count, less, you know, less complexity, no big heat sink. You know, there's so many reasons why this should be cheaper. And it's not. I would imagine the street price will probably naturally fall to match, because I don't see a lot of people buying them at this price. So hopefully that will happen. But absent that, I'm really not sure what to say about the price. I wouldn't be surprised if not a lot of these sold outside of the people that were really, really interested in making that four drive RAID on a single card like that, like we just showed on the last page. That's very compelling. It's a really cool thing to see, and it's one of the better ways to get a bunch of, you know, it's the highest performing 480 gig SSD that you can assemble, really. You know, it's pretty darn good performance for, you know, in any single card. But again, really pricey, right? That same 480, you know, if you wanted to, you'd spend $800 just on the four 800Ps to assemble that, and then you have to spend like another $50 or so on the card. So it's $850 versus a 900P 480 gig is $600 for just one
makes
card.
Makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, even though it might not be as fast sequentially, okay, it's still pretty damn fast. So, yeah. It's a tough call on this one. I sat there for like 20 minutes trying to figure out like what award would it even get. And I ended up I just didn't even do one, because I can't, you know, it probably almost a guaranteed gold award, at least if the price per gig at least matched the 900P.
Right.
But it's just too high. You're asking for too much money.
Too high, people. If your Oculus Rift died this week, your beloved VR headset, there is a patch for that. Much to the embarrassment of the crew over at Oculus, they forgot to renew its security certificate, causing part of the Rift app to crash and prevent access to its VR software. So go up to the website and download the latest update for that, should you be locked out of the VR gaming experience. Hate it when that happens.
there was a lot of uproar about this, not just because their communication wasn't the snappiest initially, right? You know, there were a lot of people that were like on their second or third reinstall of the Oculus software, or possibly already on like a Windows reinstall by the time that, because think about it, you're trying to use this thing, and that's I would probably have followed the same path based on what it was doing, just like a random crash of a piece of software that you reinstall the piece of software, it still doesn't work. Like, that's pretty much your next step, you know, barring any other explanation. And
I just love those moments where you realize that, you know, this just reeks of, wait, who owns the certificate? Wait, who's got the access to the certificate? Who's got the password for the certificate manager?
Yeah. You can imagine what was going on behind the scenes. That must have been, you know, insanity over on the Oculus team. I get that.
Right.
But there was also a bunch of other insanity going on just in the user space, right? Like, you know, you had developers that were getting ready for GDC, which is coming up. Like, I saw a couple of posts from that where I think it's GDC, right? Is that the thing that's coming up?
Yeah. Game Developers Conference.
Yeah. There were a couple of guys that were just like, I'm in crunch time. This thing stopped working. I've been troubleshooting it. Like, I'm supposed to be getting my code ready. I'm not supposed to be, like, dealing with this, right?
Surprise! So
someone definitely dropped the ball. Yeah, it just... It's just aggravating to know that there was a cert that could have even expired to make this thing just not work. Like, why is that, you know, why is it to that point even that it needs
probably to make sure that the downloads are secured in a way that makes it enormously difficult for people to hack into the system and do terrible, terrible things to your computer via their software updates.
Yeah.
Yeah, in any case, that. Oculus.com/Rift-patch/ you're looking for Oculus patch March 2018.exe, and Oculus is really, really sorry about that. As well they should be. In other news, AMD back at the launch of the Vega, there was intimations that AMD could do a little bit better on the performance or optimize the performance of certain games, right? You know, because there's this kind of game that goes between GPU vendors and game manufacturers and the chip manufacturers. And AMD decided that they were going to pluck some low-hanging fruit, some very, very important, very, very popular games, and they were going to do some tuning for like Counter-Strike Go, Dota 2, League of Legends, where they thought they could improve gameplay. And there's a nice write-up on this that Ryan put together on PC Per. Quote, better management of buffers and timing windows to decrease the time from input to display. But they had a very specific selection of games and situations that it could address, which evolved into Project ResX, or the Radeon Esports Experience. And I like that Ryan puts, quote, most popular, unquote, PC games for Radeon GPUs. Driver level fixes, tweaks, optimizations, working with game developers. And driver release 18.3.1, which is up on AMD's website, has these rolling into the drivers, and then some of the fixes will be rolled into the games in the coming weeks. And, you know, of course, there are some results. The results look really, really impressive. You know, 11% performance improvements in average frame rates, you know, stuff like it's pretty much any Radeon owners, not just RX 580 owners. You know, AMD claims that the click to response measurement, that's when they're using high speed cameras for testing, was as much as 8% faster in Dota 2. This is pretty meaningful stuff if you're a high level gamer. PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds, game ready drivers, you know, on a GTX 1050. You know, because it's funny because Ryan points out that NVIDIA has been working on similar efforts and their performance improvements in PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds up to 7% in the latest driver. So, you know, we've talked about this in the past. We'll talk about it in the future. It's amazing how much driver optimizations can do for overall performance, you know, as the resolutions get higher. and the cards get faster, those performance differences tend to get a little bit lower. You know, if you are on a Radeon graphics card right now, definitely upload the new driver, especially, or the latest driver, especially if you are using one of that short list of games that's on there. So it's pretty cool. They're basically saying faster frame rates, a more fluid experience, more responsive experience, and free to you. So go AMD on that one. Yeah, what's the largest power supply unit you're running right now?
Just like around my house, probably like an 850 or something.
Are you even using the capacity on that? Well, you're actually, I shouldn't be asking you this question because you have extenuating circumstances involving some high performance computing environments. But I just thought it was cool. Leading to review Seasonic's new Prime 600 watt titanium fanless power supply.
Yeah. This is crazy. It's 600 watts. There's no fan.
That's a lot of wattage. Unless you're running multiple GPUs and a fairly hefty processor flat out, 600 watts is going to be more than enough for the vast majority of humans. You know, and there's not a lot of them out there, but this one's rated 80 plus titanium and, you know, zero DBA, fanless operation. It's
no
incredibly efficient. Yeah, and, you know, lead in as usual, incredible array of testing, outstanding voltage regulation, low AC ripple, a single 12-volt output can deliver up to 50 amps or 600 watts, which is epic. Four PCI Express connectors, two 4+4 pin/8-pin ATX CPS connectors, a 12-year warranty. I was excited about 10 years. I'm even more excited about 12 years. Gold-plated connectors. He says the build quality is excellent. Japanese capacitors. The danger, though, is that you need to have excellent case airflow. So this doesn't eliminate needing air to go through the power supply. It just means the power supply is set up in a way that allows you to, you know, it's pretty. There's lots of holes in that enclosure because they want lots of air to move there, and that air is going to move through that power supply enclosure via all those holes inside of it. So you're going to need to have good airflow inside of your case. You're going to have to manage it. And it's not the least expensive power supply, or as Lee puts it, 80 plus titanium efficiency plus fanless equals expensive.
Yeah, it's definitely expensive. We were doing some math last night on the efficiency combined with like the range of you know, wattage, and if you run this thing at like 300 watts or so, it's almost 95% efficient.
Yeah.
So,
which is pretty amazing. Almost, when you think about it.
You almost don't even need to worry about having case air moving through it at that point because it's only dissipating like 20 watts or so, which is nothing in terms of, you know, PC heat output, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it could almost just radiate that out with no airflow and still run relatively cool, you know, just on its own. It's, you know, that much surface area with only 20, 25 watts dissipation, it's going to be fine. It could literally just be sitting on a desk out in the open with nothing blowing on it and wouldn't overheat. So interesting to see, you know, that much of a, you know, you have to put really good parts in a power supply like that in order for it to be able to, you know, run at those high wattages with literally no fan. So,
but you're basically saying the math says I don't need to be as paranoid about airflow through the fan as I am.
I would be paranoid. If you wanted to run this at its max, I would be paranoid. Yeah, okay. 600 watts, it's going to be dissipating something like 50 watts. Now you're starting to get up there to where things will start cooking if you just let them sit with no airflow. But again, so much surface area that 50 watts even isn't that big of a number as long as there's some small amount of airflow moving over, you know.
Right. And to give you an idea what that actual cost is, it's not brutally expensive. I mean, if it only lasts 10 of the 12-year warranty, you know, you're talking about $20 a year, $199.90 from Amazon.com. So that's a pretty sweet power supply. You know, and it's also funny that we're looking at these really amazing power supplies and being like, that's so expensive. I guess, you know, compared to a fanned power supply, it is a little pricey. Man. I want one.
Yeah.
I don't need one. I want one. Something I do not want, but I am deeply fascinated by. Hard OCP got a hold of one of Encore's new V1 water blocks. This is a prototype. I don't know how large the actual potential consumer base is for this, but you know they're going to kickstart it April 1st. So maybe this is part of an incredibly large and complicated April Fool's Day. It uses the M51 socket to mount to your CPU, and it's pretty slick because literally it drops into the mount, the mount drops over, and it's in place. Hopefully we'll see that shot, or maybe I'm hallucinating having seen that shot. but it's pretty crazy to look at. You know, top plate's brass, bottom plate's copper. And this is a sneak peek up on hardocp.com. And I thought this was kind of fascinating to look at. And if I'm not mistaken, that's one of those crazy naked, delidded CPUs they're about to drop this onto. So wait for that. Oh, there's the CPU.
Yeah, he's putting the CPU in. And you might have to skip
naked ahead as the day it was born. Okay, here it comes. Brace for impact.
So is that, it clips into the bracket.
Uh-huh.
That's interesting. So basically it becomes the heat spreader.
Yeah.
Wow. That's impressive.
So if you want to learn more about that, nude
that, that is really impressive because it's, you know, if you think about it, it's, you're going to use the, in theory, it'll use the exact same clamping force as the,
right,
as the socket mount itself. So you hopefully shouldn't crack any dies.
Shouldn't
that?
I got to say, you know, if this is an April Fool's joke, it's an incredibly sophisticated one that somebody spent a lot of time putting together. Kickstarter for this launches on April 1st. Nude CNC is the name of, the small business that's going to be putting these together. I'd keep an eye on Hard OCP for links to that one. You know, I have not seen the entire video yet. I just got to the part where they were installing it and just got more and more fascinated. Hardware looks beautiful.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it's
a nice looking piece of hardware. So just a thought, if you're feeling like you need to get a little more extreme in your cooling, you can delid your processor and put a water block on top of that and then get a, you know, radiator like I used to use. crazy thoughts. Anything coming up on PC Per that you can tease that's around the corner?
I'm just playing catch up on a bunch of random storage stuff. So there'll just be some more storage articles coming late this week, early next week.
Nice.
Got an interesting IC dock. I forget which part number it is because all the IC dock model numbers are a crazy number and letter salad. But right. It's a 16 bay 2.5 inch SATA SSD,
really?
Like a hot swap enclosure.
Oh, that's awesome.
It uses 4 mini SAS HD connectors. So you pretty much need a RAID card on the other end of that guy. But a really easy way to just have 16, it uses it's 2 high 5.25 inch bays out of a case.
Nice.
So that's a pretty dense brick of SATA SSDs in a relatively small space. So that's a cool thing. And then I got My Digital SSD, those SBX SSDs, which coincidentally enough, they're NVMe by 2, just like that 800P we looked at today. But these are NAND, and they're designed to be super, super cheap.
Is that from mydigitalssd.com?
Yeah. My Digital Discount or mydigitalssd.com. I think they're both the same company.
Yeah. So that's, you know, 1 terabyte for $340 doesn't seem that cheap. But 128 gigabytes for $60. That's the SBX. That's the NVMe.
Yep, they're NVMe.
Oh, that is cheap. I'm sorry. That for an NVMe drive, that is cheap.
Yeah.
For an NVMe, incredibly cheap for an NVMe drive.
Yep. And actually, I think that 1 terabyte price is supposed to be dropping lower, if not now, soon. I just got updated pricing from them recently.
I actually, I need to buy a new SSD. Could you test that one really fast and let me know if I should buy it or not?
I mean, I don't have the review up yet, but like for the money, it's a good buy and it performs well. Yeah. I can say that much. We have the results already.
Cool.
I just don't have like charts to show on the stream, but yeah, I mean, it did well. You just have to realize again, it's bottlenecked by a buy two link sequentially. Mm-hmm. So that's not a problem if you just have a laptop. And where are you going to move stuff to or from faster than, you know, faster than buy two PCI? That's where that question comes in when you're worried about sequentials.
So basically, you're laptop, not, yes, desktop, no.
You could, you know, mom's desktop that you're building for her, that sort of thing. You know, you're just looking for a cheap SSD to throw in and you don't want to have to deal with SATA, right? That's the idea. They're trying to get the PCIe stuff down to the prices more in line with SATA parts, but you still have an M.2 form factor that's actually using PCI instead of SATA. So
point
that's
taken.
The goal. Yeah.
So many goals. Oh my goodness. We had some fun on TechThing this week. A friend of mine has what essentially amounts to a $13 mesh router, although it will not perform as well as like a $500 mesh router. We talked about that on TechThing. It's amazing what you can do even without putting OpenWRT on a relatively inexpensive router. Shannon took a look at Eufy's Lumos and TP-Link's LB130, a couple of smart bulbs, got a little smart bulb battle on going on there. Because Hue bulbs, which everyone really picks because they're awesome, are still like $45 each, which is expensive. And we talked about lubricating fans because we had a viewer email discussing how his fans kept dying, and then he was putting axle grease on them, and then they were dying again in 6 months. So we do a little conversation of, you know, what you use to lubricate a fan and, you know, why the viscosity might be a little high on axle grease.
Just a little.
I was just like, not that. Anything but that. So, and if you're excited, ladies and gentlemen, it's Pi Day is next week. So I'm looking,
sweet,
as always, forward to Pi Day. See what new and exciting things come out. Oh, my goodness. This, ladies and gentlemen, is a podcast called This Week in Computer Car Hardware. We call it Twitch for show. Twitch.tv is not the place to find it. Twit.tv/Twitch is where you can find all of our older episodes and links to subscribe and information on how to subscribe. Alan Malventano can be found at PCPer.com. And you can find me at TechThing or AVXL.com, which is a video show and a podcast that I do. I'm moving fast because I like to see if I can make our TD scream for this year in bridal joy if it's... it's, you know, man, Ryzen processors are cheap right now in advance of the next generation or the next upgrade on the Ryzen processor platform. SSDs are looking good. Memory prices will eventually come down. GPUs are still too expensive. And that's pretty much the summary of desktop hardware. Good time to buy a laptop, less good time to be building a desktop if you're a gamer or need a GPU for your creative processes. Yep. So, Alan, thank you so much for taking the time to join us this week.
No problem, anytime.
With that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Patrick Norton.
And I'm Alan Malventano.
And we'll see you next week on Twitch.